Well, Dan really likes wine. This week we go French, and not just any French, but one of the great family estates of Bordeaux, a wine that has two different labels, two different classifications, but across the board, a history of great elegance, great heritage, and a great deal of fun making world-class wine. And so you're probably expecting a very thick, almost unintelligible French accent to be joining me on the show. But instead, I welcome somebody who I think, Damien, I'm almost welcoming home, because yes, you are here in the context of Barton Family Wines and that wonderful story, but had things gone ever so slightly differently, I could have been interviewing a safari guide.
Absolutely, yes.
Welcome. Lovely to have you. Let's start with that story, because it's a really nice point of introduction as you're visiting South Africa. But you've been to South Africa many times. I think your grandfather used to bring you. You fell in love with the country. And in particular, you fell in love with the bush to such an extent that you're actually trained to be a safari guide.
Yes, absolutely. My first time in South Africa was in the bush in the Kruger. And I have developed a love, and I thought, you know, let's go to the full idea and pass my game reader diploma, and was quite fun. Now I get my fix with an NGO called Wild Tomorrow, which is in the KwaZulu-Natal. So any excuse is good to be back.
So it must have been a slightly difficult decision to make. On one hand, you have this qualification and a clear love for the bush, but you also have this multi-generational story of what is the oldest family-owned estate in Bordeaux, going back to the 1855 classification and even before that. How tough was that decision, or was it always written in the stars that Damien would stay in the family business?
I was lucky that there was never any pressure, and I think it's most important, because wine has to be a product of passion, because that's what makes wine so interesting. You know, the difference between a good wine and a great wine is the soul that you put into it. So I guess just growing in the middle of it, my playground was the cellar and the vineyards. So I guess I got this natural interest, and I think there's something very special that my grandfather would do. Just every Sunday he came for the Sunday roasts with a bottle that would be blind tasted, that he would double the cant in a Bordeaux bottle. So it would have been, you know, Burgundy or anywhere else. And then we had Screaming Eagle down to wine from his holiday in Egypt. So, very, very random. And I think it made it more fun before anything else.
It's a love of wine that runs through the family for so many generations now. And where you and I have another point of contact is not just South Africa and the love thereof, but also Irish heritage. I was born in Belfast, and the story of Barton goes way back to an Irishman who started the whole story.
Yes, exactly. And it's funny, because we always kept a foot in Ireland. So the first Barton, Thomas, left Ireland in 1723. And he was in Ballyshannon, so very north of Ireland on the coast. And his house is now a wine shop by pure coincidence. And then who bought Louisville Barton, he also bought a place called Straffin House, which is not in our family anymore, but now it's a very famous golf course called the K Club. And so my grandfather was born there, so I still benefit from this Irish link, where I have two passports, the French one and the Irish one.
You almost have the perfect life in we own a wine estate in Bordeaux. If you also own the K Club, I think I probably would have stopped the interview and walked out in a fit of jealousy and intense envy. You've still got this wonderful space, though. And it's one that is very different to so many of the other big Bordeaux estates, the big names, in that you've kept it as a family business. And it is the oldest family business in Bordeaux in the wine world.
Yes, exactly. I don't know how my ancestors managed to do it, because it's true that under the French law, every generation is divided. I mean, their inheritance is divided equally amongst the children. So my educated guess was that it was following the Irish heritage law, where one of the children who inherited, the one who was interested, would inherit it. And this is how we kept small family owned through all these years, without having to be split amongst 50 shareholders and having to sell it. So I'm lucky with that.
It's still very much a family operation. I think it's your mum who oversees things, and she's the ninth generation, is that right?
Exactly, yes. So 10th generation in Bordeaux and eight I'm the 10th generation in Bordeaux and eight at the Château. And my mother is still there, so slowing down a little bit, quite happy to leave to my sister and I the things she doesn't want to deal with anymore and keeping just what she loves.
And you now have, as you mentioned, your sister is part of it. Tell me about your journey into wine beyond just your grandfather giving you great wine on Sundays. What was it about this world that you felt, yeah, this is definitely me?
I love the nature part of it. There's something magical about being able to be in the vineyards in the morning and then in the evening, in Paris or even New York, talking with people who've never, put a foot in mud. I think it's a great connection to be able to link people with this fragile ecosystem, which is nature, through a product that's group people together so much. It's the power of wine, of bringing people together from various cultural horizon or social horizon is very precious. So that I love, and I think the variety of wine is so fun. There's I think we all have a glass of wine or just four or five wine that sticks to your mind where you have a sip or you have just put your nose in there and it's mind-blowing. And one of the first experiences that I really loved is going to London in this wine shop called Lee & Sandemann. I did an internship there and went downstairs and he was tasting a few Italian wines and it was a Brunello. And I was like, gosh, this is so good. It's similar but different, and it's the whole world. And London is a fun place for that because it's non-producing country, so they welcome wine from all around the world. So if you're curious, it's a whole playground.
London is great to explore wine on the fringe. Wherever you go in the world, though, if you are from Bordeaux, it's instantly recognizable. And the Bordeaux Red, in particular, is something that everybody either has drunk or aspires to drink. You are, with this great family business, with this great story, introduce our listeners, our viewers, to exactly where you are and why there seem to be two names, because there's a Langlois, there's a Lierville, they have slightly different classifications. How does that come about?
So loss of the name in Bordeaux is the name of a place with the name of a family. If you look at the first classified growers, Mouton Rothschild, Lafite Rothschild, so the Rothschild bought, and so they still own the place since they bought it, similar to us. Lierville was used to be only one Lierville, and when they got split, then the name of the family got sticks to the name of the place. Family Barton, got linked to Lierville, and then Langlois in Old French was the house by the stream. And the reason for that is there was a pretty large stream that would actually was great to put stuff, barrels, food, animals on little boats that would then go to Bordeaux, to the big port. It was really the center of the village before it became a winemaking place. And when Hugh bought it, added his name to the place.
And you have, back to 1855, these classifications. Not something we have in South Africa. The term first growth is often used without people always, I think, fully understanding what that means. You have a second and a third growth. What does that say to you? What does that mean? What is the importance of those terms?
So in 1855, there was this Exposition Universelle, so World Exposition, where in Paris, where the objective was to show to the world what France does best. Very quickly, it's been asked to the brokers of Bordeaux to establish a classification, and they very simply actually looked at the prices of exchange of these wines. Generally speaking, usually the the better the wine, the more, the higher the demand, so the more expensive. So they classified about 60 wines from 1 to 5. And of course, the first classified growths are very famous: Mouton Rothschild, Lafitte Rothschild, Latour, Margaux, and Aubryon, and goes up to 5. So in Saint-Julien, there's no first, there's no fifth, but we're lucky to have 2 classified growths on the same roof, which is very special.
How does that work at a functional level? Because they're quite close to each other. Are you very clear on what goes where and how you split up the two brands?
Absolutely. So it's the same cellar, which may seem a bit chaos, but we really think the vineyard as one, and with a real plot by plot approach. And then in winery, we know that the VAT 23 has the plot 77, which is a plot of Louisville Barton, and maybe the VAT just next door to that will have the plot 69, which is a plot of Langlois. So that's how really we keep track of our various plots. And then we do the blends with, of course, the plots of Langlois makes the Langlois, and the plots of Louisville, we make the Louisville.
Which leads to 2 wines, one we're about to drink, and that can't come soon enough. But just before we jump into Langlois, the Louisville, which I got to drink a little early on today, very Cabernet Sauvignon driven in the particular vintage we had, and magnificently so. Tell me a bit more about that particular wine.
So Saint-Julien is 2 plateaus, and although they're made the same place, the terroir is very different. So when I talk about terroir, it's the mixture of soil, climate, and topography, so orientation of the vineyards, play a big role in the difference of taste of these 2 wines. And Langlois has some fleshiness to it, while Louisville have a bit more precise, probably a bit more austere, but very long and elegant. And that would be the big difference between the two.
It was a joy to drink. We did so a little earlier. I think I did a rather good job of pretending to use the spittoon. Far too good to actually, though. And then to the Langlois, which we're going to have. So just from a personal perspective, because you got to pick a wine for us to choose here. When we were chatting earlier and doing a tasting, it's always lovely to see somebody for whom it's more than just, oh, this is a nice tasting wine. There is so much passion to it. And being this family business, you can understand why. What is it that this wine is saying to you and talking to you about? And why do you feel it's as special as it is?
So, of course, Langlois is close to our heart because it's the first estate we bought. And this is, where my grandfather lived and my great uncle lived. And now all this generation have walked on the same carpet. So of course, Langlois is very close to my heart. And 16 is probably in the last 30 years my favorite of all, because usually a great vintage is very big, very tannic, and unapproachable in the first years. They really need time to get together and start to show a bit of what it has to offer. And also the acidity in this great vintage really makes the wine very shy. What I love with the 16 is it has high acidity, so it has a great drinkability, which really is the most important thing in wine. It's I don't really care about being an impressive wine, having big points. It's or a big wine that's fleshy, and I want to be the first bottle finished. I want people just to go from a glass to another one without even thinking about it. And acidity plays a key role. And in 16, this acidity did not make the wine shy. The quality of the tannin is so beautiful that there's a drinkability in this vintage, which is superb. And yet this wine was still aged for 50 years at the same time. So it's an exceptional vintage where there's a lot of complexity, and it's very fresh and vibrant at the same time, which is rarely find.
The potential to go on for years to come is very clear. And when we talk about Bordeaux, we often speak of vintage and a 40-year-old, a 50-year-old, and there is something wondrous to that. But not everybody can hang on to wine that long, can afford that sort of wine. From a commercial perspective, how important is it in a world where there is more wine than there are people to drink that wine, that you have something that doesn't necessarily need to be bought out only 40 years later?
I think yes. I think that's a change that's been done in the recent years, where we still make wine to age, But I think there's been a big work on the way we work on the structure on the tannin, where we're trying to make wine more approachable, even on a younger stage, where the real focus on having just the best tannin. So of course it's a work on the cap. It's a stricter sorting. Technology has helped, understanding of how it works. You know, this is the little more scientific parts that helps us to understand, and with trial and error, of course. But I think we've progressed a lot in gaining more finesse and elegance. So you'll be happy to drink a Bordeaux in the first 10 years without losing any teeth.
You also, I think, have some flexibility, given the nature of how you are set up, where you're not working from a blueprint vintage to vintage, and you can take the very best of what a particular year offers you. Are those years changing? There's the rumor of climate change, as our American leader would have us believe. It's very clearly had an impact on the wine world everywhere, and I think here in South Africa we hear many stories about Bordeaux and the struggles that some producers are having. Is it having a market impact on Bordeaux as a whole, and how much of an impact is it having on you?
There's definitely new challenges. So of course vintage variation in Bordeaux is huge. It has always been huge. I personally feel the climate change is having an impact. We have more and more alcohol in our wines. In a way, it's been great, because we've had more often in the last years great vintages where maturity was great, and the good sugar levels. Up to a point where some places in Bordeaux have realized that alcohol levels are getting too big, so we're losing elegance in wine. So there's a work on having to replant grape varieties that produce less alcohol and higher acidity. Not having to be too original or go too far to get, but for simply switching from Merlot to Cabernet, might be Cabernet Sauvignon or Cabernet Franc. And then, yes, of course, this man in the US is kind of causing havoc. I think he's just part of the problem. Just the whole world is facing a lot of challenges, which makes it hard for producers in general in the world, and Bordeaux probably in particular, because it is the largest wine producing country. So of course it's a large volume. Maybe it was a bit out of trend for a while, because it's the grandparents used to drink this, so maybe it's interesting to try something else. As we said just before, the structure of the wine needs to change, because people like wine that are on the lighter style. So I think classified gross Bordeaux will never really change, in the sense that what makes them complex is this high extraction. But on the entry level side of things, getting more fresher, more delicate style will help. And it's really the case. I really feel Bordeaux has hit the bottom, but with that comes need to pull out some vine to set a new clean base to improve on.
The answer to this question, I think I can guess at, but I'd like to hear the detail behind it nonetheless. Vines being pulled out, fewer people drinking wine, competition as never before for Bordeaux, where still the first growers, wine like yourselves, are seen as global benchmarks, but there's a lot of very good wine around the world seeking that same consumer. And you're at the moment in a country that's very much part of that equation, where there's some great South African wine. How much pressure do you think Bordeaux is under? How confident are you about the next 10, 15 years for Bordeaux's wine industry?
I'm very confident. Maybe I'm biased, because of course I come from there. I'm very confident because only Bordeaux can produce this kind of quality with this kind of volume. So as you said, Bordeaux will always be a standard. As long as people produce Bordeaux blends, we win. Probably. Now, the day we'll start to call them Meritage, like it's called in some places, this is where we'll start to be a bit more attentive to the changes. But it's, of course, competition is high, but to me, we're all in the same boats. It's not really competition where that's we're not making computers or we're producing a product where the neighbor is making different wines. So of course, South Africa or US or wherever is obviously going to make an even more different wine. So I think the consumers have more choice, but it just brings a more large, a larger choice of wine to taste. And even myself, I'm so happy that in Bordeaux, we get more exposure from wines from South Africa, from the US, from South America, or even from China now. It's just more fun. It does mean that, yes, probably where people used to drink Bordeaux all the time, that they drink a bit less Bordeaux, but other wines. I think it creates a positive pressure on people to aim for the best quality possible.
That quality, I think, is going up all over the world. And for those of us who are simply drinking the wine rather than making and trying to sell it, that's a joy because what we're getting exposed to is fantastic. I love that there is a bit of South African wine finding its way into Bordeaux. What is your take on South African wine in as much as you have been sampling it?
I love it, probably because I have also a love for the country. There's a very, probably... a love for it that's biased. It's a great terroir, and this variety of soil as well in the country is such a great playground. And I must say, I'm a bit jealous of you have so many different soil and very quickly change of climates based on you're more to the Pacific side, more to the Atlantic side, Indian Ocean side, more to the Atlantic side. And different exposition. No, it's a whole playground, and there's some amazing wines.
There are indeed. There are also incredible people and great wildlife. You've attested to both. Before we wrap up, you did mention the charity that you're involved with earlier. Tell me a little bit more about how the involvement works and what you're doing there to make a difference in conservation.
So it's quite funny. So of course, if I could manage to recreate a link with the bush, I would have been very happy, and it just appeared out of chance where a wine collector was involved with this NGO, American-based. It's a couple who visited South Africa and realized that the subsidies from the government to help their anti-poaching team, help conservation, were actually very low. They didn't have enough money to buy themselves a new pair of boots every year. So this couple of Americans started this NGO and then was being helped with many people. And one of them is an English guy living in the US who loves Bordeaux and loves our wine. So he came over to visit, conversation started. And then here I am helping them to work. We built a beautiful lodge to welcome the big, the most generous people. With a nice wine cellar, and it's a fantastic project where the main objective is to help conservation in general, buying land that was very run down, restoring it to enlarge the game reserve areas.
That's fantastic. I'm really glad to hear that. And I love the way that two clear points of passion have come together so nicely. So that's fantastic. Keep up that great work and keep visiting South Africa. And in closing on the subject of visiting, I do love coming to Bordeaux for people who do likewise, or maybe have never been, but are thinking that maybe Bordeaux is on the travel horizon in the next year or two. What is it about coming to Bordeaux beyond just, yes, we make amazing wine, that for you is somewhere you're so proud to call home and that offers so much for those of us who are coming to visit?
It's quite a big city, so there's a lot of cultural thing to do. We have a beautiful theatre. The food scene is incredible. And it's also so easy. It's a two-hour train from Paris. 1 hour flight from Paris. We have also the beach. I know surfing is quite big here. We have really, really good surfing beach, one of the best in the world. The Pyrenees are close. It's just a lovely lifestyle around. So it's I always tell that it's a great place to go if you like wine, but it's also a great place to go if, even if you don't drink wine.
You didn't have too much persuasion to do, but you've certainly nailed it. Damian Barnes-Sartorius, thank you very much indeed. It's lovely having you in South Africa. Thank you not just for bringing some fabulous wine along, but for being such a passionate champion of South African conservation and the country as a whole. And we look forward to plenty more Bordeaux coming to South Africa and the odd bottle of South African wine getting back to Bordeaux in return.
Thank you very much. It was a real pleasure. Thanks.
There we go. Thanks to the team at Great Domains who bought some of this fabulous wine. And it's not lasting very long. It has been snapped up. Why? Because it's fantastic wine. It's very well priced. And it has such a wonderful, wonderful legacy of this family that goes back, closing in on 200 years now, of coming together through now 10 generations and making wonderful, wonderful wine in Bordeaux. It is the Barton Family Wines appearing this week on Dan Really Likes Wine.